it's too loud again. No, it's okay.
Sorry.
Once you stop moving, it'll slow down.
Oh, sorry.
Still getting used to this new microphone. It's much more
really,
sensitive.
Really sorry, but woo-woo.
Woo-woo.
It's a little quieter. Yes. Woo-woo. Woo-woo.
We're wooing a lot because this is the 50th episode of What the History.
Yay! We're 50. We still look younger than that.
Well, we are younger than that.
Yes,
anyway.
We are.
Not by much in my case, but anyway. That's okay.
I tell everyone.
I don't
they
act.
Then they'll know what your secret is.
Well, I don't act my age.
That's true. You don't.
That could be it. Anyway, we're going to keep this waffle fairly short.
Sorry, we're waffling.
And just, we'll give, for those who listen to the waffle, here's a little heads up. This is probably one of the darkest What the History is we've done outside of the Halloween episodes.
It wasn't meant to do this, but...
Just the
it just happened that way.
The stuff that we came across... couldn't really be left sitting, I feel.
No.
Because it was just like...
No, we're sorry.
What the...
Yeah, we both let out a what the.
A big what the.
Massive what the.
For both of these, for different reasons. Anyway, I think what we should do is probably finish waffling.
Yes. No waffles. No more waffles. Waffles with cream and strawberries.
Oh, don't tell me that. I'm one of my days where I don't eat much.
Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Intermittent fasting.
Caramel sauce.
Oh, that's cruel.
I can be cruel.
I know. Later.
Tell everyone our secrets. Goodness, Trevor Holland.
We're already losing on the 50th. Okay.
Yeah, we're losing it on the 50th.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
All good. And on with the show. What the...
History.
Hello and welcome to the What the History podcast, the very special 50th episode of What the History.
Woo-hoo-hoo. Yes!
Indeed. I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by...
Susie Holland.
And what do you have for us this evening, Susie?
Yes, okay, now as Trevor explained in the waffle section...
Mm-hmm.
Of without the caramel sauce this time.
Let's not get to that again.
Sorry, I'm sorry. This is a very serious What the History, I guess. It does deal with death. Both of ours do deal with death. So I'll just continue on with mine. Okay. When I say the word plague, what comes to mind, What the Historians? Is it Alexandre Yersin, the French-Swiss bacteriologist, who along with Kitasato Shibasubiro in 1894, discovered the plague bacillus, now named the Yersinia pestis bacteria, while they were studying an outbreak of plague in China? Is it the rats or the bubonic plagues that ravaged China and Europe between the years of 1347, some sources say 1336, and 1353, wiping out up to 60% of the European population? Is it the fleas which rode, fed, and lived on the ship's rats as the ships from other lands docked in port? Is it the terrible symptoms of large black swellings in the lymph glands that spelt the end for those stricken by plague? Is it the London plague of 1665 to 1666? Is it the Great Plague of Marseille between 1720 and 1722? The third pandemic of plague in the Chinese province of Yunnan in 1855, which by the time it petered out in the 1950s, 100 years, that had taken 15 million lives? Or do you think of Queensland, Australia? Yep, that's right. Even Queensland wasn't immune to this particular horrific fatal disease. On the 27th of April 1900, a van driver named James Dreveson from Hawthorne Street, Woolloongabba, was the first person to be identified with the bubonic, the most common type of plague. James drove goods from Wharves, and it was from there the plague-infested rats were found. James's house and the houses next door had iron barricades quickly erected to act as quarantine, with his house being cleansed and fumigated thoroughly, with bed linen and curtains burned. The very hastily erected Combsley Plague Hospital admitted James, who actually made a very full recovery after being in quarantine for 7 weeks. Unfortunately, the plague claimed several victims. For example, an 18-year-old man named Jones from Cordelia Street, South Brisbane, and a Mr. McGregor of Kangaroo Point. Jones's family were put straight into the Combsley Hospital, with their home being under quarantine and cleansed, while Mr. McGregor's family were quarantined in their home. Both Jones and Mr. McGregor were buried on Gibson Island in the Brisbane River, taken from the mainland in special plague boats, their bodies wrapped in sheets soaked with carbolic acid and their coffins slaked in lime. Their families recovered from the disease. From 1900 to 1910, 499 cases of bubonic plague were recorded, with 219 deaths, many in Brisbane. In April 1901, authorities stopped burying plague victims on the island, as their families objected, and they were buried in various Brisbane cemeteries, such as South Brisbane. The Combsley Hospital was closed on the 10th of June 1903. In Maryborough, the town was to receive two types of the plague, with the bubonic and the pneumonic plague, which transmits itself by inhalation of droplets of the Yersinia pestis bacteria, and was discovered there in 1904. On the 3rd of June 1904, a case of bubonic plague was recorded, but not officially sanctioned as plague until 5 days later, with the passing of a man in hospital. Again, cleansing and fumigation of the house where he first contracted the disease and of the newly built plague hospital's isolation ward where he died was done to minimise the risk of further fatalities and sickness. John Riley, a baker from Adelaide Street, contracted bubonic plague, recovered, and was plague-free for almost a year. John's co-workers were placed in quarantine inside the bakery, where police were stationed at the front and back of the building, to ensure John's co-workers didn't try to escape. The local paper, the Maryborough Chronicle, called for calm. When the pneumonic strain arrived in 1905, it caused 8 deaths. Of these 8 people, 5 were of the same family. John O'Connell and his younger siblings, Richie, Ellen, James and Mary, who were reported to be neglected by their father. And Mrs. Edwards, who helped lay out the body of John O'Connell, also died, as did 2 nurses, Cecilia Bauer and Rose Wiles, who nursed the children in the hospital ward. Tests were carried out to confirm plague, with the results not being made available for 2 weeks, by which time 2 nurses from the Combsley Hospital had arrived, but nurses Bauer and Wiles, fearing the worst that the plague was amongst them, wouldn't let the 2 Combsley nurses attend. As an official diagnosis still hadn't been made in those 2 weeks, the ward hadn't been in quarantine. After the plague diagnosis had been made, the Combsley nurses put the ward in order and organised and administered the vaccination against plague, a serum made from the bacteria. The remaining hospital nurses were sent to Pyalba, approximately 22 kilometres away, to recuperate. There's a memorial to nurses Bauer and Wiles outside the Maryborough City Hall, which commemorates their heroism. The O'Connell Cottage was burnt to the ground on the order of Maryborough City officials on the 3rd of June 1905. After 1909, Queensland enjoyed 12 plague-free years, which led to a slackening of regulation. The next plague outbreak was in 1921, which caused 63 deaths, and the last recorded case of plague was in 1922, when a plague-infested rat was caught in Stanley Street, Brisbane. What the indeed?
I'm just shaking my head because you just can't imagine the plague hitting Queensland in like the 20th century.
Exactly, but you can understand why, with all the ships coming over, especially from China, and when Alexander Yeston, oh gosh, was discovering the bacteria from that province in China, we had Chinese ships come over, and yeah, so you can just see how that would happen and spread quickly. But I actually came across this story in the Moreton Bay Library, what's coming up in the events and things, and they're actually going to do a talk on the history of the bubonic plague in Queensland. We're not sanctioned by the Moreton Bay City Council Library at all. But I think it's rather interesting. And if I wasn't working that day, I'd be going, because I find it quite fascinating, though horrible, really horrible.
Well, speaking of horrible, that gives me a segue.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I try my best.
There we go.
Good sir.
Let me elaborate on that, shall
okay.
I?
Okay, all right.
You can go for years enjoying something and never know what inspired it. The inspiration can be simply someone the creator once knew, or something even darker, or a combination of both. I recently found out that a movie I love was partially inspired by real-world events in a way I never could have imagined. So it's a bit of a personal what the for me. Please be warned that this will be a bit grim, which is an understatement, and I will be discussing murder and suicide. So if you want to skip past some of these details, I will be putting timestamps in the podcast description down below. Now, before I get to my pop culture geek out, we need to travel back to 1954 and the tragic events surrounding Carolyn Wasilewski. Carolyn was 14 years old and was considered a bit of a wild girl, with a reputation for hanging out with the air quote wrong types. In a story in the Dispatch newspaper, published on November 12, 1954, Carolyn was described as a quote, jazz-loving, boy-crazy teenager who relied on adult makeup and slang talk to appear older, end quote. So that's just a teenage girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, it's...
Carolyn was making the newspapers as just a few nights previously, on November 8th, she had left her home in Baltimore in Maryland, USA, at 6:15 p.m., saying she was going to visit a friend so they could register for their high school winter dance program. She had gotten herself dressed up for this event, wearing a black skirt with pink and blue arrowhead design and a pink sweater under her black corduroy jacket. She had wrapped a black scarf around her neck, and her hair, which had rollers in it, was covered by a green scarf. She never met with her friend, and her parents spent the night searching for her. The following morning, an express train from Harrisburg to Baltimore was slowed down by police and diverted to another track. Witnesses on the train could see a body covered with canvas lying where the train would have sped through if the police had not been present. Carolyn's body had been discovered on the tracks. The cause of death was believed to be a blow that fractured her skull, and despite being partially stripped, there were no signs of sexual assault. The only other clue at the site was the name Paul, written on her thigh in lipstick. It was soon discovered she had not died at the site, after police found personal items and bloodstains in a vacant lot not far from where she lived. According to the Dispatch article, quote, among the dozens of drapes, girlfriends, and other acquaintances of the high school girl, end quote, police were particularly interested in speaking to a man who lived near her, who owned a similar car to one spotted close to where the body was discovered on the night of the murder. In an extra grisly twist, the suspect was found hanged by his own belt across the road from the vacant lot where Carolyn was killed. They were unable to link the apparent suicide to the murder. The investigation continued. In an article in the Baltimore Sun on November 28th of 1954, it was reported, quote, a 22-year-old East Baltimore drape, known by the nickname of Rocky, was taken into custody late last week for questioning about the murder of Carolyn Loretta Wasilewski, end quote. The article clarified he was not a suspect, but police felt he could provide important information. The article further speculated, quote, it was evident that police were dipping into drape sets outside the southern and southwestern sections of the city for clues to the identity of Carolyn's killer, end quote. Most tragically, police were never able to find enough evidence to point to the guilty party, and Carolyn's murder remains unsolved at time of recording some 64 and a half years later. Now, I know you are wondering, what does this have to do with the movie I mentioned at the start of this sorry tale? There was an 8-year-old resident of Baltimore at the time who was quite deeply impacted by the murder and the conversation surrounding it. He found himself feeling sympathy for these so-called drapes after seeing how newspapers were covering it. He was quoted as saying, it was very, this is what happens to girls who hang out with drapes, end quote, in an article in Broadway Buzz in 2008. If you're familiar with the work of this director, you probably recognize the term drape and have worked out where I'm going with this. This 8-year-old was John Waters, and in 1990 he released the movie Crybaby, the story of Square Girl, Alison Vernon Williams, who falls for Drape Bad Boy with a Heart of Gold, Wade Crybaby Walker. This was John Waters' attempt to redeem the Drapes he had felt had been unfairly judged all those years ago. Crybaby is a fun and very funny, light-hearted musical romp that is much more accessible than some of John Waters' more extreme work, and has since been turned into a Broadway musical. I have watched this movie more times than I care to think about, and have even appeared in an interactive screening. So when I found out it was at least partially inspired by the tragic story of Carolyn Wozzolowski, I must admit I let out a very, very audible "what the" while I was at work.
How absolutely awful.
But I tell you what, though, it certainly opens my eyes up more to John Waters. And you know, I really respect what he's done in this case because, I mean, it's a situation that keeps going on today where people just go, oh, look who she hang out with, look how she dressed. That's a load of rubbish.
It's absolutely disgusting. And for someone to blame who she hangs out with on her death.
Yeah.
Poor Carolyn.
Yeah.
She did not deserve that. And neither did her parents.
I
feel so sorry for her parents. Yeah. Oh, that poor girl must have been so terrified.
And I certainly do hope that one day they can find out who it was. Because I know that with more recent technology, they are finding
DNA.
You know, finding solutions to crimes from, you know, 50, 60 years ago.
Absolutely.
So, there is still hope that there can be some justice for Carolyn. But at least we know that, in a way, a positive tribute was made to her. I was thinking, oh, what am I going to think of Crybaby next time I watch it when I was researching this? But now it's like, well, this was made from a sense of love and respect. So, John Waters,
thank you.
Already respected you a lot. I respect you even more. So if you do hear this.
Thank you, John. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much. And bring the Crybaby musical to Australia.
Please do.
Yes.
Please do. Please do. Please do. And cast me in the role of, what's her name? Wanda. I love Wanda.
Yeah. I played Hatchet Face in the interactive screening.
You did. You did. Oh, nice. Got character. I love Hatchet.
I promise we wouldn't turn this into a Crybaby Quote Fest.
So we're not going to do this. We're not going to do
it. It is so hard. I'm resisting so much right now. I really am. And if you haven't seen Crybaby, totally check it out.
Crybaby, crying all the time. Okay, that's me singing. Oh, my God. Oh, dear.
It is
our 50th birthday, and I can sing if I want
to. Indeed. And I am resisting so hard to not let loose right now.
Crybaby! I love Pepper as well. I love all the Crybaby girls.
They made him the happiest juvenile delinquent in Baltimore.
And I met a girl!
Okay. I had to get there. Okay.
Oh,
is that out of my system now?
Oh, bless.
It's out of my system now. So, if this was your first What the History, we're normally a bit cheerier than what we've discussed tonight.
We're sorry, but we like to also keep a balance here at What the History.
Yeah.
You know, some funny things, some crazy things, and some downright horrible things as well. Because like we said at the start, history is not always funny. History is not always upbeat and hilarious. Like the rabbits from Napoleon. I still think that's hilarious.
Or the badgers.
Or the badgers. Oh, badger number three. History is not always upbeat.
Yes.
But, you know, we like to give you things from all different areas.
Yes.
Because we're thorough.
Indeed. So this was definitely one of our more serious ones, and what we have discussed has come from a place of respect for the poor victims of the plague.
Absolutely.
And poor Carolyn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
rest in peace, everyone.
Indeed. Mwah. Indeed. You haven't been forgotten.
Definitely not forgotten here at What the History.
Yeah.
Never.
And on that note, if you want to know more about what we've discussed tonight, we do have references down in the podcast description down below, or you can head to our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, where you'll find all of our previous episodes with all the references linked in there. If you want to hear more weather history outside from our homepage, you can subscribe to us on Spotify. You can subscribe to us through Stitcher.
We're everywhere now.
On Apple Podcasts, on any podcast app you may think of, it's all there. Easy to find. And there's even, again, handy links in this podcast description, which I don't think work on Spotify, but you can work around that, I'm sure. You're clever people. You listen to What the History.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our fellow What the Historians.
That's right.
Yes.
Absolutely. We don't raise silly peoples.
Not at all. And and if you want to get in touch with us, maybe you have some bizarre bit of history that you know of that you would like to hear more about, we're super duper easy to get in touch with. You can go to the homepage I mentioned before, leave a comment below this very episode. You can find us on Twitter or Facebook, or you can send us an email to wthpod@rufusproject.com, or you can even head to tv.rufusproject.com, where the exclusive enhanced video versions of this podcast appear as well.
I'd just like to point out to everyone that Trev's not reading from anything when he tells you guys where to find us. He's just coming out with this all in his head, and well done. Well done, because I don't know how he remembers it.
I've got to manage it all.
I know.
I'm the...
Don't you dare say you're the brains.
Designer and manager and website admin and everything for all this Rufus
That's
Project
right.
stuff.
That's right. He has much experience.
And listen to the Rufus Project podcast as well. Just
Go on.
Yes.
Go on. Enjoy yourselves.
That's another...
Treat yourself.
Awesome fun podcast here on the Rufus Project Network.
Yeah. Well done, Trev.
Yes.
I just research and report and...
And get reminded to research.
And get reminded to research. Sis, we've got the history coming out this week. You better go and research something.
A little behind the scene for those listening to our 50th episode.
Yes. Yeah. He has to remind me sometimes because I am a very, very busy girl.
We're all busy. I understand busy. And we understand
you
everyone
heard that
out
guys.
There.
He's trying to.
Everyone out there has busy, busy lives. So thank you for taking the time
thank
to
you.
Listen to What the History. And on that note, I think
thank
it's
you,
probably
everyone.
Time,
thank you.
Time to wrap things up.
And so. Happy 50th to us.
Woo!
Woo! Woo! Maybe it's going to be 50 years. Oh, God, are we still going to be. Oh, we'll be 90. Why not?
When we're
With the advances in science, we can live to at least 200 now.
When we're back in a couple of weeks' time with two more bizarre bits of history to make you say, what the history?
Good night, everyone.
Farewell.